Hey there, Shopomaniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front end web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer. Chris.
Yeah, it's Q&A time. Just me and you, Dave. We have lots of new questions to go through. Reminder, please go to shoptalkshow.com and hit that ask a question button and send us in things. You know, meat and potatoes of Shop Talk Show is answering your questions. Let's do as many of as we can in this one. This is a fun one. Lots of good questions. But we have one here from what's that?
Oh, I just feel like we're getting back to the meat and taters.
I know, it's great. There. Even when we have guests, we should do more Q&A. You know, it's fun to get their answers to questions too. This is a fun one. Steve Polito, and I feel like Steve's written in a bunch of times. So thanks, Steve, for being a kind of longtime community member of the show. Steve tells us, I love Ruby on Rails. I love it because I can quickly, easily, and build production-ready web applications with weeks or even days. You know, I feel like that's been the promise of Ruby from, or I mean, not just Ruby, but Ruby on Rails from like day one is the speed of it, right? It's mature, stable, has a great community. You know, I think as we speak, RailsConf is going on. So that's amazing.
Yeah, as we're recording this, RailsConf is popping off.
It's because of this, I have a hard time convincing myself to learn Node because I'm so comfortable with Rails. You know, my challenge is I don't know when and how to reach for Node when I could just use Rails and have the added bonus of having a kind of an end-to-end testing framework built in, something he finds, you know, Node frameworks kind of lacking. Is there a stable, mature, full-stack Node framework out there even? I think Steven is, in the longer version of this question, pointed to Meteor. But it wasn't sure if how full that was. So what do you think about this? Does it, first of all, whenever I read a question like this, I try to back up and be like, are we comparing apples to apples here? Is that a fair comparison? Or I think it's close.
I think so. I mean, you know, I think Ruby and it's Ruby versus JavaScript is kind of I feel like the core of this. You know, I think, I agree with Steve. I love Ruby on Rails too. You fire it up, you just Rails generate, you know, model pizzas, and now I have pizzas like and now in my database, and it's all set up. I didn't even have to configure.
Well, there's a thing right there. You need a database, that's a thing, right? Like, so we're talking things that need databases in this comparison.
Things that need databases. You just kind of you have a very strict model view controller. Model is whatever connects. Like that's your database, like that's your data structure. View is the HTML where your view works, and controller is kind of your logic. So like, okay, when I click save, that's actually an update function. And so I'm going to write def update, do this stuff, save it, and then return whatever I need to return. So usually you return. Like
yeah, it's a nice separation of concerns there that I think it doesn't take people too long to wrap their mind around. I think if you're really heavily front-endy, you might ignore the model because you feel like that's something you've kind of punted traditionally to back-end people, and that's fine. But then the crossover, you know, the controller is where you both kind of have concerns because, you know, you might be like, I need this data, but I need the data. I've been using this word a lot lately. Munged. Do you say the word munged a lot?
Yeah. I munch some data in my spare time.
We're always munging, you know, because you might get stuff out of the database and then you just need to munge it a little bit to be ready for how you know, you're going to use it on the front end. You know, like I need the array sorted or whatever.
And that's like what you're supposed to do, right? Like take that logic out of the front end off of the client, you know, or because then your templates get all messy or whatever. So you munge it in the controller or even better in the model, you like pull out that munging into its own kind of, you know, whatever function in the model. So that manipulates the data. And then you have things like I've been like marveling about is like Rails's flash notice or flash error kind of system. You like, if you, whatever a form doesn't submit, you can like say, like set the flash notice to oops, I failed. And then on the front end, it'll render out, oops, I failed, if you have like the flash block, and you'd kind of have it by default. You have to like turn it off basically. And I'm just like, that's awesome because I'm in this weird legacy Java app land where they don't have that. And guess what? We have session bugs. Like just, you know, it's like, oh yeah. So we figured out how to show up that thing, but we don't like it. you know, no one remembers how to turn it off. So we had to like go, okay, well now we have to wipe out. So it has like all these conventions for building an app built into it. And that's what I think, when I think of Rails, like that, you know, I guess Rails is kind of a crack cocaine joke maybe, but, or like, but I think it's a, like, it's a guideline. It's basically like, hey, these are like, just help you go in a good path for building an application. That's like been the whole intent for the Rails framework. Moving over into Node land, I don't think a lot of that exists, right? There was Sails, or is Sails. So you can use that. I've met some of the developers on that. It's a cool project. But I don't know a lot of people using it in production, but if you are, like, I'd love to hear success stories. But I also think like things like Create React App and, you know, Nuxt.js for Vue, I think they're kind of filling this framework void a little bit, but I don't think it's as full featured as, say, Rails.
Oh, certainly not. Yeah. But maybe intentionally, not like, oh, it's just early in the Nuxt land, so they don't have a login gem yet or whatever, you know. That's what I always think of, is that, like, I've used Rails when there's a database involved and it's, you know, somewhat complicated, not like, like just like a key value store kind of thing, but like a fully relational database kind of situation. And I need stuff like routing for one thing, although that is one thing that, like, the next Nuxt land generally handles pretty well. So that might be a node-worthy thing to have moved. And stuff like a login system. I know that's not the world's most complicated thing, you know. It's not like you need Rails to have a login system, and there's plenty of, like, node JavaScript-powered login systems that are probably pretty transferable too. But I kind of take the point, though, from Steve, right, that they're not all baked together quite as nicely. Maybe having end-to-end testing as a first-class citizen of the framework, it's a little bit more piecemeal, perhaps, in Node land. And
yeah, I mean, well, that's, I mean, you, like, a lot of React stuff is, and I'm generalizing here, so don't send angry emails, but a lot of React stuff is, like, bring your own. Like, oh, bring your own data store, you know, Modex, Redux, whatever, or bring your own authentication system, Passport, or whatever you're using. If I A/B things, that's what I like about the Vue community a little bit more. They have a bit more first party conventions kind of built in, and that's the
Talked about that a lot in the Evan Yu podcast, right? That the Vue is tremendous at that, aren't they?
Just, yeah,
having like blessed solutions.
So in that way, that saves me a lot of mental energy, I'm realizing. Like I don't have to hunt around on NPM. I'm not like an NPM scavenger. I just like kind of just like patiently work through the docs on Vue a little bit more. And I'll usually find like a first party thing where there's like, you know, you go to the forums and it's like, oh, these are really the only two things that do this. So, you know, you want to use tabs? Guess what? It's Vue tabs every time. You know, like, that's it. So I kind of like that. But again, it's all about conventions, right? Like Rails is, Ruby is the language, which is beautiful. And I like writing in it, but Rails is just the conventions. And, you know, people hate Active Record. There's a lot of haters on Active Record, but man, is it a really great way to get data from a database, you know, like from a relational database. It's maybe being superseded by GraphQL or something like that. But, you know, it's really not so different, you know, in my mind, if you could write, I don't know, it's kind of like English language, get stuff from the database.
Mm-hmm.
So
really good. Love it. Steve was kind of asking about learning Node period though. Like I can't, you know, like I'm so comfortable with Rails that like, I can't even think of an opportunity to try Node at all. And I'd say that, I mean, I guess if there's no full stack, super comprehensive Node thing, and that's what's preventing your learning from Node, sure, you know, like, okay. But Node is, you know, you don't have to, like, dabbling in Node to learn it a little bit doesn't have to be a part of a massive overhaul operation of full stackedness. You know, when I think of Node, most of my interaction with it is small, and it's largely through serverless stuff like Lambdas. Which are wonderful at running Node. So here's an example. We have a Rails app. CodePen is a Rails app. And we're working on, we use Lambdas for all sorts of stuff. But here's one simple example that we're moving to. We have a service for exporting a zip file of a pen that you create. So right now, it's a route. It's a URL that you can hit. So you hit like /share/zip/whatever, and you pass it like the slug of the pen that you're exporting. And Ruby on Rails deals with it. It goes and collects what it needs to do, and it writes some stuff to disk, and it creates a zip file, and then that URL endpoint returns a .zip file that your browser downloads. Great, right? Except for that's our web server's job. And it's like writing to disk and stuff. It's a little bit perhaps heavy of an operation to be doing that. And now that we've written it that way, you know, after all these years, we're like, that was fine for a long time, but it's not as separation of concerns as you might kind of expect in modern architecture. You might think, oh, an export service. That's a fundamental nature of this application. It's like a part of the workflow of using this application at all. Maybe we should think of export as a service on CodePen and communicate with that service via a defined API. So it's like this thing like, okay, when any one part of CodePen talks to another part of CodePen, we should have like a standardized API way of talking to it, even if it's just internal. I mean, hopefully at some point some of this stuff becomes external in a way, but having your application talk to itself in standardized formats is cool. So maybe CodePen, the web server, talks with CodePen, the export service, via this defined, really clean API. And then there's no reason for that export service to necessarily just live on the same web servers as everything else does. It could be a hosted service anywhere else. And a Lambda is kind of perfect for it. It's a little piece of Node JavaScript code. Now, a Lambda can be Ruby too these days. So I'm not saying that like these things have to be written in any particular language, but JavaScript is familiar for lots of people. It runs nicely on the server. It's kind of a first-class citizen of a Lambda anyway, that we can write a Lambda function in Node JavaScript that takes this API, it makes the zip file and does that job. Now we've kind of separated that ability from the web server, which is nice because this service can scale infinitely because that's what services are good at. It's wicked cheap, which is nice. You know, maybe if it reduces the burden of the web server, that's just nice for reliability and stuff anyway.
Yeah, because, I mean, theoretically, it probably won't happen. But if like 1,000 people just click that export button at the same time, like CodePen would be like, oh, no, I've had a problem. I've made a huge mistake. So
yeah. Whereas a Lambda, you can hammer all day. It's just, it's infinitely powerful server.
So Node is really good at these like kind of small, like tiny micro apps almost. But it can also be.
Yeah, I didn't need the Ruby on Rails of Node to write that.
Right. Just, you didn't need
not
it
at all.
And maybe the Ruby equivalent would be like Sinatra, you know, like you just kind of have like a tiny app, you know. But yeah, I think that's an excellent case for me. Like the limitations of Rails, and I'm sure they're working on it, but, you know, there's always like the, okay, I'm going to click this button and I want it to be like in an active state, like a setting, let's say a toggle, right? I'm setting up my email preferences. I click the toggle, Rails goes off and fires a thing and comes back, and then you're supposed to like deal with that in the template. And sometimes you get into like, if it's dramatic, like you want to say like, yeah, following, you know, update the text or something. You either have to do that in JavaScript, you know, for every single button, you know, every single variant there, or you have to go refresh a partial from the server, or just something like that, or you're relying on turbolinks. I find like the Rails sort of hits a limit there on like interaction stuff. So like if you're in heavy interaction, you're starting to actually put more burden on the server than what you could do in the client using like client side state. So that's where a situation where I'd maybe want to move off of Rails is just, or probably in my mind, what I think I actually want is maybe Vue inside of my Rails app, like just like a little bit of Vue just to help with these kind of stateful interactions. So, cause that's sort of where I'm thinking I would like to head, but there's stuff like that in Rails where you're kind of like, I don't, oh, this is actually, I'm not having a fun time building out this weird interaction. So I've had that experience, and there's things like Node. Node doesn't just instantly solve that, but like heading over to JavaScript land helps kind of ease that. So, and all these JavaScript frameworks work very well on a Node client, so, or a Node app, a Node server. So there you go. That's what I would say. And Node has another reason I do use Node is concurrency. We built that game, right, Chris? A Global Defense Club, which is
you built that game. It was very cool.
But it allows like 600 people from a conference to like play the same game all at once. And so, you know, if you had
that's wild.
So like you have like 600 people show up and play, like do a Rails app that's like doing like server calls to like update every pixel real time. Like that's gonna not go so well. So something like a Node server is really good at high concurrency. Rails has Action Cable, I think is what it's called, but I just my experience there it was not so rad. So I feel like the kind of real time chatty apps, chat apps, I don't know, financial real time data apps, you know, those kind of benefit from like Node services and high concurrent WebSocket sort of situations.
Sure. So I think, you know, a high level here, it's that you don't, if you're not wrong, Steve, if you're solving all the problems that you have already with Ruby on Rails, then whatever, you know, but it's not, that's not like, it doesn't mean that you can't learn Node in some other way. And that there's all these like things that Node is good at, like Dave just described. And I talked about with Lambdas and stuff that make it kind of like, well, reach for it when you need it for those reasons then, but not for Rails replacement reasons if you aren't interested in that.
You know? Yeah. And it depends, too, how much you like JavaScript. You know, if you aren't a big fan of JavaScript.
That's a huge part of this.
Probably not going to have a lot of fun writing a Node app. So, but, or stretch yourself. So there you go. Next question. Andrew Robinson writes in, does such a job exist where you're part of a design and development team? I enjoy both sides of the process, and part of the fun is translating a design into a website that performs well and is intuitive to users. So many job titles out there that I can't seem to navigate and find something along these lines. Chris, is there a...
Yeah, well, the question, I guess Andrew's question is, you know, he doesn't want to be one or the other. He kind of wants to be both because he likes both. And then if you look around job posting boards for jobs to specifically tell you that you're maybe it's not going to be as easy to find, you know, I don't see job postings like that very often. Like we need a bothy or whatever, you know, a designer,
we need a magical unicorn,
diviner,
designer developer.
I
feel Andrew's question here. I feel very much in that camp. I know a lot of people who kind of exist in this camp. You know, they're good at design and development, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's not full stack though, for the record. I think that's kind of interesting, right? That full stack has been thrown around way more now than it ever has been in the history of that term, I think. But it doesn't mean designer developer. It means front end / quote unquote back end.
Yeah. So this reminds me of like Brad Frost's front of the front end kind of thing, right? Like
if you're front of the front, then maybe that design is more likely at least to be part of your.
Yeah. Well, and I hope it's interesting because there's kind of like designers and people just treat them as like visual designers, or it even goes into this like designer with a capital D, you know, and we just think about the essence of the design, you know? And then there's developer, and it's just like code whatever I come up with, you know? But in our experience at Paravel, it's like a good team is when people are functioning as both, you know? I know enough UX that I can spot bad decisions or make good calls on my own, or know when to escalate, you know, a bad decision. And even Reagan and Trent, like they both know how to code, so they'll hop into Web Inspector or code and commit code themselves. And that's, I mean, been super helpful for us because we don't even open Photoshop really. Like we just talk about code, which is so much more valuable. So I think And if you have a good relationship with designers, I don't know, like maybe you pitch yourself as like a, I code your designs really well, like then you'll probably have a lot of design teams like wanting to talk to you, but.
Perhaps. I think that pitch that you just said, that's pretty clutch, right? Like when you're looking for a job, especially if you throw your own, I mean, sure, you'll probably make a resume, but I feel like these days you're probably pointing people to URLs and those URLs are digested as like the first major thing that a company considers when looking at you. At least I get that suspicion that they're putting more weight on this, some URL that they're looking at rather than, you know, your PDF or whatever it is. So can that, I mean, in I don't know, I put too much weight on that right now, but whichever route you take there or both, can it say Andrew Robinson, I like both design and development? Can you have some tagline that like sells? Because I like that you have self-reflected to the point where you know that that's what you like. So tell people, tell the world that's what you like. And maybe that job will manifest itself because you've told the world so clearly that you like the intersection of these worlds so much.
Blog your problems too. Like just talk about it, like drum this up. Like when we started this podcast, front end developer wasn't even a term. I swear we just made it up. Like we're like not us made it up, but like it wasn't really a term. Like it just was kind of like, we do this weird, we're like HTML people or whatever. And so, but now it's very much a term. So like this idea, like a developer that codes designs really well and makes them performant and owns that kind of whatever Mina Markham was talking about, like the, I own the code that goes to the user. Like, man, that's going to be pretty valuable. And maybe it's not, there's not a job title right now, but maybe there will be in 5 years. So this is a problem I think a lot of companies have, right? Like how many hours are they spending on visual bugs or, you know, regressions or, you know, it's because they're just letting anyone code on the front end. You know, I think a lot of companies deal with that. I think the challenge here is like a lot of times in companies, there's a UX department, like, or a design department, and then there's an engineering department. And even the design department can't even hire engineers because they would be in the engineer tier, you know? And so, and there's two different pay scales and, you know, whatever, job title elevations or escalations or whatever. So I think
maybe the smaller the company, the better for you, Andrew. I don't know if you're, you know, how early you are in your role or looking for jobs or what, but I tend to find that jobs morph as you do them to match what you are good at and what you're producing and how you're presenting yourself at meetings and the work you're knocking out and stuff, you know, like if you're truly foot in both worlds kind of guy that you get, especially at a smaller company where roles are a little bit less carved in stone. I find that maybe that, you know, just get the job and then your job will become that job if that's truly you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm at a small company and I kind of have to do this by default because we don't have other employees to do it. So maybe a three-person team is where you want to be. So.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by NativeScript. NativeScript is a great way for front-end developers to start building native iOS and Android apps. You might have heard about NativeScript on Shop Talk Show before, but this time they've got some exciting news. NativeScript now officially supports Vue.js for app development. If you're a Vue developer, you can now build native mobile apps using the same framework you use on the web, while leveraging the power of NativeScript to tap into powerful mobile APIs. You can try it today at nativescript.org. And of course, they've got support for TypeScript, CSS, and popular frameworks like Angular as well. NativeScript lets you build awesome mobile apps with technologies you already know. You can start coding today with the NativeScript Playground, which is a 100% web-based resource to help you get started in minutes. And then the NativeScript CLI is there for you when you're ready to take that next step. They've got a great tutorial on their website, and then you can also get started playing with some sample apps like an animated search, a login form, music streaming app, social fitness trackers, swipeable cards and animations, charts, tab bars, restaurant menus, flight booking UIs, movie listings. There's ones that show how to build a Tinder-like swipeable card UI, putting a native dialogue box in front of the user, animated rotating menus, carousels, etc. Lots and lots of stuff to check out. Be sure to visit nativescript.org to get started today. Our thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
Oliver Williams, another I don't know. There might be multiple Oliver Williams out there, but I just get the sense we've talked to a lot of Oliver Williams. Hey, Oliver, how you doing?
Hey, Oliver.
I would like to transition into UX. I've done a fair amount of UX work, you know, in my career, but I don't know. I have enough to make a portfolio. So this Oliver Williams is early in their career. How do I make that move? We even talked to Jessica Ivins.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about having this document that even she keeps up to date as you know, successful and you know, kind of established as she is. Even she still does this, but she tells her students to do it too. That idea of, you know, writing down everything that you do as you go on a week by week basis so you don't kind of forget. And the idea is that if you do that for long enough, you know, you're doing that for a couple of months, that it kind of becomes your portfolio. It becomes the stuff that you should be talking about that you did. So I think people have a blocker sometimes that says, like, I haven't done 3 production websites that I can point to. Thus, I don't have a portfolio. And like, I don't know. I don't know that that's necessarily always what a portfolio is. There's like other ways to talk about yourself. And even if it didn't become production, who cares? It doesn't mean it can't go in that portfolio. You can talk about other, there's just, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we are doing this exercise with Dan Mall, still going on, but we're kind of redesigning the Shop Talk website, and we picked up Afia and Carrie, and who are helping us redesign the page or the site, and you know, they just sent their dribble portfolios, you know, and kind of just were showing they had a portfolio, and maybe not all the stuff was live and on sites and stuff like that. So I think like we had, you know, it was a good, it was just enough to like, be like, okay, I like what they're thinking here and what they're doing. So let's go with these people. There are a lot of people like that who had good portfolios and just, you know, just enough to show what they're thinking. It doesn't necessarily need to be something real and out there. I mean, that sounds terrible, but it doesn't, you know. It could be, you know, some kind of, you know, every designer on Dribbble has like made a weather app. So whatever, come up with your version of the weather app and kind of like that Dan Mall episode, we should link it in the show notes. But, like his whole thing was like, you know, it's extra work, but like, if it gets you a you know, high 5-figure job, is it worth it? You know, and it kind of might be, you know, so if you just put in a little extra time to kind of, I'm going to do my riff on a weather app or a color contrast picker or a, you know, what, you know, yeah, come up with different things, maybe something a little more complex with a few more interactions, you know, a banking app, you know, just a couple screens from my banking app, you know, like, I mean, shoot.
You got to do something is the point, though. Like, you know, I don't know why this is so confusing, I think, to some people. Like, I don't get to, you know, just to make an extreme metaphor, I don't get to decide, I want to pivot to being a doctor. And it's annoying to me that I have to, somebody won't just hire me as a doctor off the bat and then I'll learn from there that I have to somehow prove that I'm doctor worthy,
you know, Chris,
first.
No one will let me plumb their house. Just no one's asking me. No.
There's just a path there. But I think people are saying, well, they won't even let me start that path or whatever. Like, no, you need to start your own path or get yourself into a situation somehow where you're learning what you need to learn without, I don't know, without requiring somebody to give you the 6-figure job first or whatever, you know?
And here I'm going to do my thing again, my standard spiel. Blogging is really good. Because it teaches you how to like talk about what you've learned and what you're working through. So there you go. It's kind of, you know.
And nobody does it. Like nobody does it. So
you don't have to even get clicks. You just, it's like self-practice. It's like, just like, here's kind of what I'm thinking about. Here's what I don't like about my Wells Fargo banking app. Here's kind of what I would like to, you know, here's what information's important to me, you know. Hopefully that helps, Oliver. Let us know how it goes. Yeah.
Sure. So, John.
Miss Lewick. I'm going to say okay. Miss Lewick.
That's pretty good. I've got a pretty solid foundation of HTML, CSS, JavaScript. The problem is that I know it in theory, but when I sit down to practice code or like create a site, you know, put it to practice, I get a big case of coder's block. I'm always second guessing the methods I use and asking myself, is this the correct way? Am I putting too much code in? Any tips to get around this wall? Oh, that's funny. Coder's block. I don't think I've even heard anybody use that term yet, but surely it's a thing.
I mean, second guessing yourself, it sounds like you're already a senior developer at this point. So, no, I mean, you have to kind of get the Larry the Cable Guy spirit and just get her done. You know, you have to like, you know, you can always make things better. And like, especially when you're learning, you're always going to like regret your first take, you know? And so just plan on like, I'm just going to like get it to a state and then I can always refactor. And that's kind of like where you, that's an important code skill to learn. Like you're just going to learn how to go back and fix things up and find an efficient way to do that. So I'm all about rough first drafts and doing that. So,
yeah. Sounds good. I mean, we, you know, it's a classic just build websites moment. Like, I don't know, you're second guessing yourself, but nobody else really cares. They care about the output. Is the code that you've written achieving what it's supposed to be doing? Yes. Oh, cool. Ship it. You know, I don't know. I think you might, you know, people are a little more self-critical than the world is critical of them.
Mm-hmm.
So just well, getting stuff done, not the
I'm thinking it could be a scoping issue. Like maybe you're like, I want to build a banking app, you know?
Oh,
and,
sure.
And so you're like, all right, so I got to do this and this and this, you know? So I think it's like figuring out like, you know, especially in limited time or whatever, like just, okay, what can I do here? Like what improvement do I need to make? Like right now, like a banking app, it's a list of transactions. Okay. I'll just spit out a list of transactions on the page. Great. Got it. Okay, cool. Well, the money part's kind of the most important. So I'm going to try to make the money part look cool. Okay. Done. I did the money part. Okay. But you know, like, and then, but I want to be able to like, I don't know, click a drop down and filter out only deposits. Like, okay, now that's the part I have to do. You know, like, I think like that's, you have to like think in those like sort of steps, like those check boxes. And I write post-it notes all the time. I got 6 post-it notes just taped to the bottom of my monitor right now. Like just write off like a post-it note task. And then when you do it, crumple that mother up and just chuck it in the trash can. And it's so satisfactory. So that would be my like, just,
We don't talk about that enough. That scope of ideas thing, and that I wonder if the people get discouraged because they want to build this idea that they have, but they aren't as experienced in understanding what the scope of their own idea is. Mm-hmm. That it distracts. Like maybe their idea is too big. I feel like, you know, it's cool to be a dreamer, but at some point you just don't you don't even, because you haven't built enough websites, don't know what's more complicated than the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking with somebody who had this idea to build like a, it had to do with reviews, and they're just like, we'll just build like a Chrome extension. And then when you happen to be on a page that has this type of content on it, it will just go pull, you know, it'll aggregate reviews of that content from somewhere else in the thing, you know, and we'll just build it at Hack Night. You know, we have 3 hours to build it. We'll just knock that together. And it was, you know, as this idea goes, it was okay. You know, like, I don't know, like I'm not going to shit on your idea, but what it isn't is thought out, like, where are you going to get that data? I don't know. There's a million questions along the way that was like, the scope of this idea definitely isn't 3 hours. And they didn't know that. That was the interesting part of that the idea just was an idea. It wasn't a scoped to 3 hours kind of idea. And just the fact that they were oblivious to that was interesting to me.
No, I think that's like the big challenge, right? Is like, yeah, I feel like there's some muscle memory there too, right? Or what would that be, like intuition, I guess, you're building gut, just to know like, oh, that's a big one or that's a little one. I mean, have you ever like estimated complexity on like a Jira ticket or something like that, Chris? It's like, how many story points do you think this is? And you're just like, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's probably a 3, but if it's on that page, it's like a 10 because that page is a nightmare. You know, like you got to know those things, you know? So
I read the intro to this book recently and it started with this quote from Neil Gaiman, you know, the author who wrote Coraline and American Gods and all that. And he was talking about, and I didn't realize that this was a famous writer's problem, but he's like, every writer gets this. Somebody will come up and pitch their idea. So they got the idea for a novel or something, and they're going to cut you in on it. It's going to be great. So they've had the idea, which is the hard part. You know, the ideas are, you know, they only rarely occur to people. So this is amazing. You know, that's the deal. And then they'll have Neil Gaiman write the novel based on this idea, and they'll split it 50-50, you know, seems fair. And Neil Gaiman's like, it's one of those like, unbelievable things. Like, no, the ideas, everybody's got 1,000 ideas. They're worth absolutely nothing. It, you know, 99% of everything is the execution of that idea.
Right. Like, Neil Gaiman's just like, yeah, I'll execute your idea. I know how to do the execution. I just, the idea doesn't really matter to me.
I'm just a novel factory. Yeah. Just whatever your idea is, I'll do it. And of course, and the translation to web development of all that is I get ideas all the time. I'll have old great friends from college write to me like, we got to sit down and talk about this. Please meet with me. And it's like, I need a way for the moms in my mom group to schedule play dates together. I have this app that we'll call play dates or whatever, and they'll join it, and then we'll pick times together, and then the play dates will happen or something like that. And you're like, and they're like, you know, this is such a good idea that if you design and development for you, I'll cut you in like 5-10% on this play dates idea. You know, that's kind of like the early thinking of it. And you're like, this is like, you know, I don't even know where to start, where you're just kind of like, oh, this is good. This coffee's great. We should do you want to go see the new Avengers movie later? That'd be kind of fun. Oh, I'm just so busy. I don't think I can do the playdate idea thing, but like, it's such a good idea. Please, keep trying. We have to let them down softly because what they've presented to you is so asinine, but you don't want to like lose the friendship over it, you know?
Yeah. You don't want to poop on ideas.
This episode is brought to you in part by WooCommerce. Today, I want to tell you about three exciting updates to WooCommerce. The first one is that WooCommerce version 3.6 shipped recently and added product blocks. So you can build rich pages with blocks in sites running WordPress version 5 or higher that show products by category, best-selling products, hand-picked products, newest products, and products with specific attributes and more. Super handy if you're using the new Gutenberg WordPress editor. The second cool WooCommerce update is the new WooCommerce mobile app for iOS and Android. You can track your store to see which products are performing best, check revenue, view and manage orders, and get real-time alerts notifying you about store activity like new orders or reviews. So be sure to search for WooCommerce mobile app on the iOS App Store or Google Play today. Finally, if you're running a WooCommerce site right now, you should check out the new Dashboard for WooCommerce Admin that the team released as a feature plugin. It's what's going to eventually be the default dashboard in WooCommerce, but you can check it out right now. You get all sorts of data and analytics on your WooCommerce store with a completely customizable dashboard, new reports, and a new activity panel to alert you to what's happening right now in your WooCommerce store. And if you'd like to see a WooCommerce store in operation, go check out the CodePen shop at blog.codepen.io/shop and try ordering yourself a shirt. The CodePen shop is running on WooCommerce, and the shirt is one of my favorite shirts that I wear each week. Our thanks to WooCommerce for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
All right, next question. Amy Etheridge, a longtime listener. Thank you, Amy, for writing in. I am the only developer at my company directly, and the rest of the team is outsourced, including the tech lead. I work on bugs and features like normal, but because of the outsource barriers, language, time, I'm finding I don't get to overhear or participate in conversations I might normally do on a dev team, like talks about best practices, how we're solving X, and so on. We have a daily stand-up, and it's very stand-up-y and has too many participants that need to the need of dev talk for the project to like have dev talk on it. I've spoken with my direct, and I've mentioned with time this might change as our company begins to take over the project, et cetera, et cetera. I find, I imagine this must be what it feels like working as a freelance developer in a big project. I'm wondering if you guys have any ideas how I can feel a little more invested in the project in the short, but probably long term.
Yeah, so I like this, that first of all, it's a weird situation to have. You're the only developer that like directly works for your company. All the rest of it is outsourced, but you're just lower down on the totem pole of development work. Even the tech lead is it outsourced to you. So you kind of report to them, but you also report to a manager that's at your own company. So you're caught between two worlds there, and you're not even hearing about best practices. Like I feel like in a sense they've made you code monkey, you know, they're like, fix this. So you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'll do that in a bubble. Here's the fix, which seems, you know, companies are complicated. Everybody's been in some kind of situation like this at some point. So, you know, it might be kind of dysfunctional, functional, you know, who knows. But it sounds like you don't want it to be like that. You're not happy with that situation in some way. I don't think you'd be writing this letter to us if you were. So how does it evolve? You know, I think that this letter was even longer. And Amy said, well, you know, my direct manager said, hey, things might change. You know, 6 months from now, maybe things will be different kind of thing, which is that's a long time to say something might happen to an employee of yours with a straight face. But so what you want is best practices. What you want is more talk and stuff. You know, you might have to demand it in a way, and not in demanding it might not be you march into somebody's office and demand it, but you might say like, listen, there's been a problem with this. I'm not sure what the best practices is. So I made a best practices document that documents what I think they are, and I'm requesting feedback on that. That's kind of a way of demanding that type of thing happen. Like if you're writing some code and you have no idea if it's like how code should be written at this company, and you're worried that three people are writing it three different ways and that's long-term problematic, it might be at you to lasso that in, you know, or if you have no idea how some problem is being solved, then use documents. You know, I feel like Notion, that, you know, not to sing their praises in every single episode, but it is really nice software that I like, is helped me in situations like this, where because everybody on the company has access to it and it's just this hive of documents, that there's kind of a clear place for documentation. You can always just spin up a new Notion doc and write up what you're thinking and place it somewhere nicely in the Notion thing and point people to it and be like, here's my thoughts on this. This serves as a basis for documentation for this project that we're working on, or the application as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, I very acutely feel this, like dealing with the offshore teams, and you know, there's, I think the time barrier is tough, because it's like you come in and you actually, you know, you can go through all the Git commits, but you kind of have like a log of stuff to kind of read through and like decipher and figure out what's going on. No one's there real time to kind of answer questions, you know, stuff like that. Language can be a barrier too. It all depends kind of on who and what, but that can be a problem. But I think, yeah, I think the one, so hedging your bets, can I do the HR side of things, is be sure to write this down. Like, send emails. Don't just talk to your direct manager, but send emails. Have it on paper so that, like, if a performance review comes up, you can be like, yeah, no, I talked about this in this email. And
love
this
that. Good so, idea.
Get some receipts going, Amy. That's pretty crucial. But I think too, yeah, like you're saying, Chris, just kind of, you know, if you're on Jira, there's Confluence, you know, start up a wiki. Every GitHub project has a wiki in there. You can just start kind of documenting best practices and leave a message in Slack and be like, hey, I'm trying to document some best practices, or just so it's all clear. If anyone has 10 minutes to look over this, that would be awesome.
You know who does that? Tech leads do that. So you're kind of like subtly saying in a way like, maybe I should be the lead on this thing. I'm the person reining people in and making sure communication is shared and that things are being done in good kind of correct ways. I feel like if, you know, a lot of people's goal in the world, and I wouldn't doubt it that it's your goal too, Amy, is to kind of level themselves up in this world. And sometimes leveling up happens by, you know, demonstrating the behavior of higher ups.
Occupying power vacuums.
I've never heard that term before, but I love it.
Seizing power vacuums by force. So, no, but I mean, that's true. Like, I mean, I think Amy's situation is usually the inverse of what I've seen in the past. Just companies I work for, is usually it's kind of like a, like, and there's usually a tech lead on the offshore team, but they are kind of more like they're the air traffic controller for issues, kind of like, okay, this goes to this kind of squad, this goes to this squad. That's sort of been my experience. Not exactly, but, you know, everyone's situation is different. But I would say, you know, I think if you're having trouble finding this information, everyone else is, or it's too, what is it, folk knowledge? Is that what we call it? Where it's just too, like, you know, you need to get that knowledge extracted. So I would take up that task, and I think it would be very good. And I was going to say Brad Frost has a really good, like, front-end developer guidelines, which I think is really nice. It can kind of be a conversation starter. I have found, just personally on that, it's such a big document that maybe you take it a chunk at a time so it's more digestible. But that would be my only advice there. So,
yeah, some of this stuff, I feel like you need to get to the, like, the meaty logical bits of it are almost like more important to talk about and document than it is to have, like, okay, let's have a 2-hour meeting about tabs versus spaces and stuff like that. Those are, like, I guess you have to do that too, but that feels like almost a distraction to, like, deeper problems. Like, the stuff that you need to tackle is the, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, just meatier stuff than that, whatever it might be, you know, like, how are we organizing components? What is our API structure like? You know, when I solve X, Y, and Z problem, how is it best to communicate how I solved it to the team so that that knowledge is there? You know, are we using a code comments kind of thing, or is there a document I could put it at so that knowledge isn't lost kind of thing? I feel like the earlier, like, you know, should I use semicolon stuff is fine to get established, but probably should be enforced by tooling rather than extensive code reviews and commenting and stuff. And the meatier stuff just has a lot more value there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I think you're on the right track to, questions, I think, at this point. That's what I would say is, like, you know, you're sensing, like, there's a disconnect, and I just kind of, you know, so I think, A, get receipts of you talking to your manager, because it's ultimately their job to, I guess, make you a better employee. That sounds like wrong, but let me reword that. It's their job to train you and make you provide more value for the company. If that, like, just from a purely business standpoint. So like if they can't do that, then you need to be like, you are failing me as an employer. So how do you guys, what can y'all do? You know? So I would definitely, like, I don't know, in regards to being a freelance developer, it's great. But you have the opposite problem is, like, now you have to do everything. So, like, it's a little bit different, but, let me know if you go freelance, ping me. That's all I'd say. So,
all right. Well, that's a great place to leave it for this episode, I think.
Yeah.
Please join us next week. Send in your burning questions about front end web design and development questions, and we'll take them.
Yep. And you can follow Shop Talk Show on Twitter. We tweet a little bit, and then be sure to. Oh, we also have transcripts. We've talked about this before. FAM Transcription is doing our transcripts, and I, like, it's super, anyway, they come a little bit late, but there they are. We're starting about, I don't know, episode 345-ish, so.
Right. Instead of piecemeal, they're now all of the episodes have it.
We're doing it. Great. So thank y'all for listening to the show. Thank you, sponsors, for supporting, because that's what pays for that. So we really appreciate it.
We have a special job shout out for you this week. It's at a place called We the Collective. They're in Vancouver, British Columbia. It's an agency. They help entertainment brands build websites, you know, engage, you know, youthful audiences with digital experiences. Good, fun stuff. So they're looking for, you know, people like you, people with experience writing semantic and well-formed HTML, nice, modular CSS, JavaScript, proficient in SAS, you know, Pug is good. Experience with Gulp and NPM and Git and all the things that you know about because you've been listening to this show for a long time, leveling up your skills as a front-end developer. That's what the role is. It's for a front-end developer in Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada. The place is called We the Collective. Looks just like a really good job for anybody out there looking to pick up front-end development work.
All right, Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, ChopTalkShow.com.